Movie, film, 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 film,
MFers. You're listening to Movie.
Movie.
Film.
Film. It's the podcast where we pick a flick and decide if it's a movie or a film. I'm Nate, and most people will never know anything beyond what they see with their own two eyes.
And I'm Terrell. And dog poo, this is awesome.
And I'm Genevieve, and exercise gives you endorphins. Endorphins make you happy, and happy people just don't kill their husbands.
Hi, Genevieve.
Hi.
Hey, Genevieve.
Pleasure to have you on the podcast. I don't know what your quote is from, but it's fun.
It sounds familiar.
Who's exercising?
I'm excited because I was a little nervous because you two were like movie pros.
You stumped us.
So I was nervous that right away you were going to say, "Ugh, what a novice quote." But I'm happy that I stumped you. Mm.
Yeah.
So what now? Am I supposed to make you work for it, or
wait, is it Heather's?
It's not. No.
It seems like a Heather's type of thing.
No. I could always repeat it if you need it repeated.
No, I remember it.
I kind of want to guess it. I kind of. Is there a hint you can give?
There is. If you want a hint, hints are always the best way to go, I think.
Give the hint.
Hint that I will give is a blonde female lead.
Legally Blonde.
Done. See?
Oh. There you go.
I knew,
okay.
Like, I knew you had it, Nate. I knew you did.
Well, I had, for some reason, I did have, like, a Reese Witherspoon type in my head, but I was trying to think what movie she was in with Murder.
Courtroom Case.
Yeah.
You know,
no, it's a classic.
Really, but yeah.
Yeah.
Brings it all together.
My quote was from X2, X-Men United, because there's a character called Nightcrawler, and that's the movie we're doing today. Or nice. Film.
And it brings, nice. Brings it all full circle.
It does.
Girl, I kind of thought you were also going to quote Nightcrawler.
I thought about it.
What's dog poop, though?
It's the Bubble Boy.
Oh.
Yeah. I decided to go with Jake. Yeah, classic. It was on TV all the time. It was my first Jake Gyllenhaal movie. First time I saw him.
Used to be on
repeat on Comedy Central.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like where you both went with your selection of quote, though. I like that.
Yeah, after 104 episodes, you got to keep it fresh.
Is that really how many? Yeah, you guys have been
doing this is 105.
Yeah.
That's awesome. I'm really happy that my podcast debut was on such a seasoned show.
Good. Before we get into some Nightcrawler talk, let's run down some recent things we've watched.
Ooh.
Because we left the last podcast on a cliffhanger. Oh, by the way, I did mention at the end of the last episode that we were going to do Toy Story 3. My apologies. We are still going to do that. It'll come later. But the other cliffhanger we left off was that we were going to watch the Coming to America sequel, Coming to America. And we did. And Terrell, first, I want to hear from you.
You want to hear from me? Oh, boy. I knew we were going to have to talk about this. So,
I'm excited to hear this.
Did you see it?
I didn't even log it. I forgot to log it. So.
Oh.
I haven't seen it.
Okay.
Okay, so, you know, Coming to America 2 is not necessary, right? Not needed, didn't need to happen. You could just watch the first one. In fact, the second movie really wants you to just remember the good old days, right? They really put a lot of the first movie in there. So I'm glad I didn't watch the first one before I watched the second one, or else it would have been really redundant. I had a lot of problems with it. From like the writing and like the story and the characters and just how it like didn't really like serve anyone. So made me laugh though. Like I had a lot, big, honest laughs, like some like real like gut busters in there. I really did. I was surprised. I was surprised because I was just like, yeah, this isn't gonna happen. But it did a lot due to Leslie Jones, who took the material that would be, I think, very cringy from someone not as funny and just like really like turns it out and really just like she does that really like loud American like out of fish out of water thing like really well in this.
Let me ask as an outside observer, so I mentioned I haven't seen it yet, but so did you go into it expecting, because right away, right when I heard, I was like, this is going to be unnecessary. This is extraneous. Like, I'm excited for it just because of what it is and simply the fact that it's going to exist. But I mean, I think for the most part, when I do watch it, I will go into it thinking, okay, this is going to be something that will truly add no value to my life. Did you go into it thinking, oh, this is going to be a home run?
No, I'm not saying that to throw any sort of shade. No, I was very worried. I was very scared about it, like the lead up to it. And as soon as it was released, I just wanted to get the watch over with. Like, I just wanted to, like, know right away whether it was, like, good or bad. I didn't want to, like, wait on it. So I watched it, like, that Friday or Saturday? It was like that weekend or whatever.
Yeah, we watched it that weekend.
Yeah. And I went in and the bar was real low. So I think it like jumped over the bar a little bit because the bar was just at the ground.
Oh, okay.
Bar was at the ground. It didn't stub his toe.
So from my experience watching it, it's funny that you mentioned that it's a good thing you didn't watch the first one because it would make the sequel redundant, because I had only seen the first one in pieces on TV, and I watched the whole thing recently. Great, great movie.
Such a good flick.
Coming T.O. America. Coming the number two America, though. Literal scenes from the first one. There's the classic, yeah, we're reenacting bits from the first one, but then very late into the movie, they have literal flashbacks to the first movie that just remind you how much better it was and with a much more consistent tone, much more focused.
Yeah.
And just the whole decades late comedy sequel is already, like you said, you have low expectations because it just seems like a cash grab. And this one literally is. There's the McDowell's joke in the original, but then they hammer that into the ground in this one and also have cat food commercial placement, Ciroc and Crown Royal. It drove me nuts that they... I learned later that they made the movie and then sold it to Amazon. So that makes it a little more understandable. It kind of sinks that Amazon didn't just give them the budget they needed, that they needed to sell parts of the movie to these companies. The one, Leslie Jones was great in it. I had been a fan of her from SNL and waiting for her to do something significant on the screen because Ghostbusters was not it. But she was enjoyable, and some of the performances were enjoyable. The story was so frustrating. The costumes were amazing. The costumes and the set pieces were well put together, and even if you're not cracking up during the whole thing, there are going to be moments where you just have a big smile.
You could tell visually that it was going to be a delight, to say the least. Like, just from the trailer, you watch that and you're like, oh, okay, this is going to be dessert for my eyes. Absolutely. Yeah.
And I think Eddie, I really do think that Eddie and Arsenio had a good time making it and dressing
up. They seemed like they had fun.
Yeah.
Eddie's not funny in it.
He's actually not funny in it.
He's not trying to be. It's not like he misses his jokes. There's not that many opportunities. He's mostly straight. And then the consistency of that character just doesn't make sense for the story. So he's kind of held back by having to force this
new narrative.
Hardened patriarch role.
Yeah. James Earl Jones is great though. And I don't want to spoil it, but there's a scene in it that is it's really funny, but it's also really touching because like he's an old man and like he can go at any moment. And there's this really touching scene in it. This event that they do for him that's really nice.
Yeah.
It felt a little meta.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There was things about it that I enjoyed. There was things about it I didn't enjoy. But, you know, it's okay. It's cute. It was cute. I feel like that's me being nice. It's like, it's cute.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Genevieve, what have you watched recently?
So most recently, I watched the Biggie documentary on Netflix.
Oh, how is that? I haven't even heard of it, honestly.
I loved it. I think it just hit Netflix recently, just a few days ago. And very rarely do I hop on anything too quickly on any of the subscription, you know, sites. But I saw that and was excited about it. And I always feel bad because just me as a film watcher, depending on the time that I start it, how much I get through is going to be debatable. So I can't say that the last like 20 minutes were taken in full, you know, like full brain capacity. I was definitely dozing off a little bit.
I think he dies at the end.
Yeah, but that my boyfriend made the same sort of joke. He's like, well, you sort of know how that one ends. But
do you,
I
though?
Will say there was much of his life that I feel like I wasn't aware of. And for example, I really feel like I had a warped perspective of his age. He passed away at the age of 24.
Yeah, wow.
And in my mind, I feel like he was a little bit, I think maybe like late 20s, I think, like is what I envision as when Biggie Smalls died. And so I watched that and was gripped for most of it, besides the part that I was asleep for.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
And it was good. And then besides that, I've been on a Marvel binge.
My favorite.
Nice.
Just kidding. I recently quit Marvel. I made a stink about Marvel. It. I won't.
He wouldn't
anything.
Watch WandaVision.
You can have
with
this.
Me.
This
you
is
can have
my
this conversation. So.
Oh, what are you? You're what? Are you cold turkey? You're off.
Yeah.
Off Marvel.
But it's not interesting to talk about. So please continue. Which ones did you watch?
So I've been getting a lot of flack because I had watched, my order was a little bit wonky, I guess, and I got slammed, but I had already watched the first two, and I had watched Guardians of the Galaxy, and then I watched final, the names are escaping me. What are the last, the names of the last
two? Oh, Endgame and Infinity War.
No.
Yeah.
No, but that's, no, wait, not those fun.
Guardians of the Galaxy 2?
Well, no, yeah, I watched Guardians of the Galaxy 2, and then I watched, yes, I mean, I watched Endgame and Infinity Wars 2, but as well. But, and then, what is the other film?
Captain Marvel?
Avengers? The Avengers? You mean, like, Age of Ultron?
Spider-Man.
Age of Ultron. That's what I was going for.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I was going for. And all of those. So we've just been on a whole, like, Marvel, Avengers, Guardians of the Galaxy, the whole bit. Because I hadn't... I was uneducated.
So that was your first time, like, watching all of them, then?
Yes.
And what did you think of this story? The whole story?
Tell me everything.
Everything.
The plot, I was underwhelmed plot wise.
Okay.
Who's your favorite heroes? What powers do you like?
I wasn't watching it for that at all. I sort of was expecting the plot to be, I don't know. And I think maybe that had a bit to do with it, that I went into it with the expectations of, you know, of being let down.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that may have, and I'm, well, I will say this. I said that I loved Groot, and everyone was like, well, what a cliche thing to say.
Everybody like, loves Groot.
Yeah, exactly. What, like, a girl watching
I gotta tell y'all something. I don't really care for Groot that much.
You don't care for Groot? What?
I don't like any of them anymore.
Not even baby, like, Groot?
That's the question.
Because that's the question.
It's safe to say if you don't like baby Groot, you may have no heart.
Mm-hmm.
Baby Groot was invented to sell merchandise.
Well, yeah.
You sound like Lewis. You sound like Lewis.
Lou Bloom?
Yeah, you sound like Mr. Bloom.
Well.
What?
If it bleeds, it leads.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, Groot doesn't bleed.
So
that's your first problem. No blood in those movies.
You don't know that. You don't know what sort of, you know, that would. There could be some sort of artery.
Some red sop or something.
Something. You know? Something. Or anything sap. Yeah.
Show me that sap, and then I'll reconsider my relationship with Groot.
Show me the sap.
Show me a heart that pumps.
I want to see that sap.
That's been the journey there, and just like revisiting, I don't know, I feel like quarantine for me, in other words the last year as of today, has just been like revisiting a lot of classics. Which has been fun. And a lot of things sort of like in their entirety. Or there's a few that I've wanted to.
What's a classic to you?
Me? Well, yeah, I mean, that word.
Like, what's it?
Yeah, everyone.
Yeah,
has
what's
their
a classic?
Classics.
Like, what's your classic? Yeah, I feel like everyone.
Well,
has their
okay.
Own classic,
well, that like... word. That word is so like, because I mean, you could say classic in terms of like Casablanca. You know,
right,
like
yeah.
We've got that space that fills classic. Mm-hmm. And then you've got, you know, you could still use that word for something like Ferris Bueller's Day Off is
right.
A classic, you know. Mm-hmm. Like, that's one that I just watched a couple weeks ago. So that's fresh in my mind. But, so, you know, that that's a few I was talking. And it's funny what different people think of as a classic too.
Mm-hmm. We call the Bubble Boy a classic. I'm sure there's some people yelling at us.
Oh, I don't think it's a classic, but it's like classic.
Oh no, but I think that's interchangeable, because I am of the team that calls Dumb and Dumber a classic.
Yeah.
Oh, it is.
Yeah, but I mean, it's not classic. It's a classic.
I will say the Coming to America sequel isn't nearly as depressing as the Dumb and Dumber sequel. So there's that.
Mm. There's that.
Oof. So see, far, Borat's the only franchise to pull it off, in my opinion.
So few franchises can do it. That's a fun game. Name, you know, two franchises that successfully. It's awful. Almost every time.
Sequels like years apart. Yeah, it is a hard one to pull off.
It's terrible. But I was having a conversation with my boyfriend, and he was saying a few classics in his mind. He wants to come on here and talk movies. He said, he's like, you asked them. He wants to talk. He said, Taxi is one he wants to talk.
Wait, that's the Jimmy Fallon, Queen Latifah?
No. The De Niro, I think it is.
Okay, Taxi Driver.
Okay.
Big difference.
No, I mean,
guess they're both classics, but.
No, I don't think. But I think Taxi and Taxi Driver are two different movies, too.
Yeah, Taxi has Queen Latifah and Jimmy Fallon, and Taxi Driver has De Niro and Harvey Keitel and Jodie Foster.
Yeah.
Oh, well,
we actually already did Taxi Driver. We have not, and probably will not do Taxi.
Well, then I have a feeling he means Taxi Driver, because I'm looking at Easy Rider. And The Deliverance were on that list too. Mm.
Okay. Those are classics.
Yeah,
that I've only seen.
I have to watch Easy Rider.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have one more I want to talk about.
Go ahead.
It's much awaited viewing.
Ooh, I know what it is.
Yeah, of Minari.
Yo, we watched.
We've been waiting Minari.
I've been waiting a long time for Minari.
I don't think it was a victim of hype. I was worried.
It was not. Yeah, it was great. It was really touching. I was waiting for it to be my favorite of the year. I was waiting for it. Like,
you had that spot open.
I had that spot open. I watched Nomadlands. I watched One Night in Miami, and I was like, nope, I'm going to hold it off till I see Minari. And
we're all collectively in love with whatever his name is now. His name is escaping me.
Alan Kim.
Adorable.
Adorable. And like just like the relationship between the little boy and the grandmother.
Yeah. All the relationships were so keenly observed and interesting. That one's definitely the most endearing and powerful, especially when it comes at the end. There's this little moment in like a big thing is happening, and there's this very small moment that feels even bigger than anything else. Mm-hmm. And that's some movie magic, and it's all the feels.
I didn't expect Minari to be so unhappy.
I think it was realistic.
I think it was realistic, but I wasn't expecting it to be so unhappy. Like, I wasn't expecting as much turmoil in the family, no spoiler, as I witnessed.
Mm-hmm.
So I just it was surprising in that way. Like, it wasn't spoiled at all by the what I saw in the trailers.
Yeah, true. It was not what I thought it would be. I love it though. The music is so good.
Mm-hmm.
It just visually looks great. Just great feel. Don't want to get too into it because most people haven't seen it.
Yeah, I can't add anything to this part of the conversation.
But it is based on the movies that are in discussion for the Oscar Best Picture Award. I guess it is now my pick. Nice. I think I like First Cow more, but that no one's talking about that for award season. So,
Minari. Oh, but you're ready to you're saying you're putting your words on Minari.
I might have to watch Judas and the Black Messiah again. I only have a couple days before it leaves HBO Max. But yeah, Minari just, it was so special.
Yeah, I agree.
Those are the ones.
Yeah. Which means it probably won't win any Oscars.
Hopefully, the cast gets nominated, and then the grandmother gets Best Supporting Actress.
That'd be nice.
That'd be nice. But yeah, it's my favorite. I would say it's my favorite so far too.
Oh, we're in agreement.
We're in agreement.
Hey, it could happen. Parasite won last year. Though I feel like this isn't sensational enough. I feel like they would only, I don't know, award a movie full of Korean people if it's super sensational, like Parasite. Right. Where they're, I mean, they're humans in that, but also they're kind of more like chess pieces or characters.
Mm-hmm.
Minari feels more human.
None of the actors got nominated, so there's that.
Of Parasite. Yeah.
So.
Well, that's what I got. Got anything else?
That's what I got.
All right.
That's what I got.
All right, let's play the trailer for Nightcrawler.
I'm looking for a job. In fact, I've made up my mind to find a career that I can learn and grow into. Who am I? I'm a hard worker. I set high goals, and I've been told that I'm persistent.
And I'm thinking, the television news might just be something I love, as well as something I happen to be good at.
Now, I know that today's work culture no longer caters to the job loyalty that could be promised to earlier generations. What I believe is that good things come to those who work their asses off. And that, good people, who reached the top of the mountain, didn't just fall there. My motto is, if you want to win the lottery, you have to make the money to buy a ticket. You have to make the money to buy a ticket. You have to make the money to buy a ticket. You have to make the money to buy a ticket. You have to make the money to buy a ticket!
Nightcrawler is a 2014 American neo-noir thriller written and directed by Dan Gilroy. Stars Jake Gyllenhaal. He's in every single scene.
He is.
Real character study. Dark. Fun.
He is. He's in all of... It's very much one of those movies where the lead role is in every scene. And that may sound silly to say, but he really... Because you sort of expect that, but that's not always the case.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I saw this in the theater and loved it and have seen it many times since and continue to love it.
Yeah, I saw it, and that's my relationship with it as well.
Yeah, you picked it.
Yeah.
You picked it, Genevieve.
Saw it in the theaters, mm-hmm. Loved it, and have seen it many times since and have loved it. And loved it either last night or 2 nights ago when I watched it again.
Yeah.
Is this, would you say this is something you saw and like stayed on your mind all night? After you saw it in the theater, you just thought about it constantly?
100%. And this type of film, too, is just always the films that latch onto me. Those type of character studies and those types of, you know, twisted sort of contrast. Because this movie is just such a contrast the entire time.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of, like, his character, and he is such a good character, and I couldn't stop thinking about this. Mm-hmm. I remember specifically after seeing it in the theaters, because it's one of those films where in those moments that, and I don't want to spoil anything for anyone listening, but there are some moments.
We spoil the movie.
We're going to spoil it.
Yeah, we're going to go beginning to end.
Oh, we spoil. Okay. Yeah. That's what we do. Okay. I don't know what the style is. Okay.
But so also what's interesting about this movie is he's a sociopath from the beginning. It's not like exactly. He escalates. It kind of escalates, but he doesn't change at all.
And that's what I said from the beginning, because he pulls over right away, and right when he first sees that car crash, there's no hesitation. Just, and who does that?
Yeah.
You know, who right away sees a car crash? I mean, we all have that thought where we're like, "Ooh, look, a car crash."
Yeah, but you might slow down.
Yeah, you might slow down. You look. We all look. We all know we look. But who stops? No yeah. one stops except for Mr. Blue. Mm-hmm. And that is like right off the bat. Okay. You're a sociopath. And then it just gets more and more and more. But there is these moments where he tries to, it's sort of who he is almost during the day and who he is at night. He sort of has these, and the way he carries his business with Rick, I feel like he tries to have this persona of the business leader, and the way he speaks to him about business growth and employee growth. And so it's almost looks like he's trying to be this strong boss character, but then you see the, you know, flip switch there when he loses his mind.
Loses his temper. Threatens people. Yeah.
So before we get any deeper, I like to do a segment called Crew Love, where I point out members of the crew that have worked on other movies or films that we've covered on the podcast. And we got a couple here in the sound department. Martin Gershon worked on Final Destination, and Michael Camper worked on Bring It On, which are two very different movies.
Mm-hmm.
Both classics, might I add.
Yeah, also a number of people, two sound guys, and also the production designer and art director all worked on the John Wick franchise.
Nice. Yeah, we did do John Wick 3.
We did Chapter 3, Parabellum. Yeah.
Parabellum. Yeah.
So, good for them to continue to get work.
Shout out to them.
All right.
To the crew.
So we begin the first shot.
Wouldn't be here without them.
Yeah. The first shot we see is the full moon, because night is literally in the title.
Mm-hmm.
And was last week American Werewolf?
It was.
Yeah, interesting. We just did that, and now we get a full moon right away in the next one.
We are into the night.
And you get the title Nightcrawler over the nighttime LA skyline, opening credits during shots in LA. I liked that the director of photography, Robert Elswit, gets his credit over like the one shot in the opening credits that's different than the others, where it is the entire frame is just the mural. Everything else is like nighttime scenes of LA, but then because it's the cinematographer gets his own credit like next to like a piece of art.
Mm-hmm.
And the use of color and light in from every scene, like starting right away, it's just the contrast in the filming is beautiful. Absolutely beautiful.
You know what I like is that out of focus thing where like lights in, it's usually done like nighttime in cities, so it's a lot in this one where the lights are out of focus, so they just appear as little different colored circles. And I like that.
Oh yeah, I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah. So the first thing we see Lou Bloom doing is breaking and entering, which he'll continue to do throughout the entire thing.
Yeah.
This time it's a like this an industrial area, and he's cutting pieces of the fence, trying to steal some chain link.
Mm-hmm.
But a guard yeah, catches him.
Yeah, he's stopped by a guard who is like, "Who are you?" Needs identification. And what we learn throughout the picture is that Lewis is a talker. He's really able to talk to people. And he's able to talk to this guard enough to where he's able to like sneak attack him. The guard doesn't have his guard up, you can say. And he's able to take him down, and then we see him putting on a new watch. So not only did he knock this guard out, but he also stole from him.
It's weird. They show a close up of the watch on the guard's wrist right before Lou attacks him, so it seems like maybe Lou wasn't going to do that until he saw, oh, he has something I want.
Mm-hmm.
I see no problem with taking it.
Right.
So then we see him wearing the watch as he drives off, and in the back seat is the chain link fence and other things he stole. So it's like the same, him hurting another human being to get the watch is just the same as collecting scraps of metal that he's going to sell.
Yeah.
And that watch stays with him throughout the movie.
Mm-hmm.
As sort of just that piece of
he loves status symbols.
Mm-hmm. He doesn't try and pawn it like everything else.
And it's funny that you say that he's a talker, because he definitely is, but it almost seems more like he's reciting. Not that it is Jake Gyllenhaal reciting lines, but in terms of the movie, it seems like Lou Bloom is just reciting things he've read on like Wall Street Journal or
on
Forbes.
howtobeahuman.com almost.
Yeah.
Like he sort of is a talker probably. Because he is charming. he does have charm, and he does use that in the way he talks and the way he communicates with folks. But you're right, Nate, it's very much this is what I think I need to say right now in this situation.
It's not genuine at all. There's no honesty in anything he says.
Isn't that the stereotype, though? Not the stereotype, the descriptor, the main descriptor of a sociopath is that they don't have any of that ability, you know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So the guy at the scrapyard, he sells the copper wire and chain link too. He tries to apply for a job. And so one of these like speeches he has is his resume, which is all verbal. And he does say some truth, because he's my favorite part of it is he says, "I've been told I'm persistent."
Yes, we can tell.
If you want to win the lottery, you have the money to buy the ticket.
Mm hmm.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was, and it's those little quippy lines that I feel like he has a few of, and like that's what gets people to sort of be like, you know, like, well, what's something's different. People can tell right away when they meet him, something's different. They don't think, oh, this guy's actually lost it, but they think, okay, something's. Mm-hmm.
Although in this scene, it sets up this thing that his character does throughout the picture, is where he sets his mark really high, like unbelievable high, and he'll talk his way into something reasonable.
Yeah, he's a negotiator.
He's a negotiator.
He offers to be an intern when he's rejected.
Yeah.
He says, "I'll work my way up." But the guy turns him down and says, "I'm not hiring a thief."
A thief, yeah.
We get that car crash.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's on the road. Stops. Sees the car crash. It looks pretty intense. Let's use the jaws of life to get this guy out.
Mm.
And so, he pulls over and takes a look. And then as he's approaching, the news van pops up behind him. Or it's not actually... It's not a news van, it's just the camera van.
Yeah.
Pops up behind him. And then they get out and they start filming.
Yeah, and Lou's got questions. Wants to know when is that gonna air? The answer is the morning, because if it bleeds, it leads.
And how much do you get paid for this?
Where is it going to air? It depends who gives me the most money. Then he tries to get hired by them, but they're not hiring. He gets a peek in the van, though, at all their equipment.
But you could see in his face that this no is a little different. Because you can tell he's like still interested
in
whatever this is. He wants to be a part of it.
And he checks the news the next morning and gets to see what he saw.
On Channel 6. Channel 6 News.
He is enthralled.
And so then, now he knows he needs a camera, right? He needs a camera. So now he's at the beach plotting on what he can steal, I suppose. And he sees this really nice bike. So he takes the bike and he pawns it.
You're just going to skip right over the top knot?
No, I was not going to skip over that. You see me, I'm ready to...
I didn't even write down bike steal. I don't even have bike theft in my notes, but I do have top knot.
Me too. But that's the first glimpse. Well, not really the first glimpse, but the first real glimpse where we see him just switch characters.
Yeah, why does he do that? It's so weird, but interesting.
Because that was him being... a bike person. No, that was him being a bike person. That was him being someone who rides bikes and who knows. Because he said, like, oh, this is a 10, you know, an 8 speed.
He says, I won the Tour de Mexico in this bike.
This has 34 gears. He's just spitting.
Giving a hard sell to the pawn shop guy.
Facts about the bike. And he's got his demeanor almost in that moment too. You can see he's sort of like, no offense to bike people. I've got many close to me in my life, but he immediately like took on like this little douchebag air sort of in that moment and like sort of with that top knot. And I think that was him. But it worked because he was able to convince this gentleman that he had this knowledge of, and chances are, I mean, that was probably shit he was rattling off. So
I'm glad you noticed that, because that top knot, I've seen this a lot of times and I've always been fascinated by that. He ties the top knot and then decisively goes and steals the bike, and he doesn't do the top knot anywhere else in the movie. So
not true. One of the first times that him and Rick, when they're in the car, is it Rick or Rich?
Rick.
It's Rick.
Yeah. All right. I just wanted to make sure. And they're driving off. They get their location. He quickly puts his hair up into the top knot before they pull off. But it's almost, again, that visualization of turning into, you know, not necessarily that same person as in the bike shop, but a different person going to do this.
He pawns the bike for store credit, gets a police scanner and a camcorder, and just goes for it right away. He doesn't know any of the police codes, but he just hears the addresses and he goes.
And
he like drives onto the curb as a guy's being stopped.
He almost runs the guy in handcuffs over.
Yeah.
That's the best, that sequence of him just showing up to scenes that are just like highly inappropriate for anyone to be filming, and not something that's going to, you know, a girl's breathalyzing.
Yeah, he's right up in there.
Cops are like, get out of here.
It happens twice. Twice he pulls up to the scene. He's way too close and just way too like pushy. Gets pushed away.
He's out over his skis, as I like to say.
But eventually he gets to the scene of an accident, and there's a guy on a stretcher, and there's actually another what are they actually called? Stringers?
Yeah.
The other video team is there.
Stringers, rivals.
But Lou's going to one-up him by getting in real close to the stretcher, have the camera right in the victim's face. That ends up getting both Lou and the rival kicked out. So Lou follows the rival to his car and eavesdrops on his entire phone conversation. And I think that's when he like really learns how to do his job.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because then he goes to the news station.
Mm-hmm. It was in that moment that he learned sort of how to communicate and how the best way to bargain those clips.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So he gets to the station, KSML, and we meet Nina Romina. I don't know. Played by Renee Russo, who happens to be writer-director Dan Gilroy's wife.
Mm-hmm.
Great role he wrote for her.
Yeah, what a fun role, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You may know her as Thor's mom. It's the Easter egg. She is the producer at the news station. And talk about one-liner. She's got so many. Just real hard-edged. Mm-hmm. What does she say? She says, the story we're trying to tell is urban crime slipping into the suburbs. Think of our program as a screaming woman running down the street with her throat slit.
Yeah.
That's the news.
That's the news. That's what they want. They want that sensational shit, you know? It's honest.
Mm-hmm.
It's sad. And
evil. It's foul. Right?
So... they know she gets,
she gets a look at the footage, and he gives her a price that's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. She's just like $250, take it or leave it. And so he gets his first commission. He makes $250 off the footage.
And he gets an education on what kind of crimes he should film. Yeah. Mm-hmm. What kind of stories the news is trying to tell.
Bloody stories. They want blood.
Yeah.
And racism.
And racism.
And
you can just see his gears turning.
Income areas.
You can just see his gears turning in that moment too, when he's asking Nina about what type of videos sell and what they want. And mm-hmm. you know, he says, so bloody, so you know, and she says
that's
yes.
That's part
and,
of it.
Yeah.
But he's really stuck on the bloody.
Yeah, you mm-hmm. see him get excited about that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's almost like he's finally getting rewarded or even getting permission to pursue things he'd be into that maybe he'd been shying away from. Who knows?
Right.
The whole thing about this movie that is so interesting to me is that it's a success story about a sociopath. But it just shows like the type of person that our society encourages us to be in order to succeed in businesses. Persistent, self-taught, go-getters, hard negotiators. Yeah, cutthroat. It's just all that.
Yeah, I mean, to me, like, is capitalism. You know what I mean? He is, to take it to that point, like, he just represents... everything he's saying, and you know, he is representing the type of mentality and that type of mentality in business.
Mm-hmm.
And it gets progressively stronger and more apparent throughout the film.
Yeah. So of course he's gonna go home and watch the bloody footage he shot.
Mm-hmm.
He watches it on the news, records it.
Saves it
as all caps carjacking crime wave.
Mm-hmm.
And now he's gonna Google in this movie is just called search. It's just a website that looks like Google, but where it says Google it says search, and he's gonna learn the police codes.
Mm-hmm.
And he's gonna get an assistant
or an intern.
Yeah So it's time to meet Rick.
Mm-hmm. They meet at a diner for an interview for a job that Rick doesn't even know what it is. He just needs a job.
I love that. He says he's showing up for just a Craigslist work, standard working And what he gets is this guy.
Yeah, he's a guy that clearly is desperate for money. He mm-hmm. doesn't have a permanent address to give Lou. He's struggling. When Lou offers him an internship, he says he needs something, some money.
Mm-hmm. They're perfect opposites.
Yeah.
You said Lou represents capitalism. It's like they also like represent like supply and demand, you know?
Mm. And to me, Rick, I mean, and right away when he's introduced, I mean, to me, he is just all that is sort of innocent and good.
He's the labor, the labor force.
Yeah, he is misunderstood, but strong and willing. And that's what's shown the whole time. And that contrast, I think, in their characters and in their relationship was necessary.
I like how in the interview, which takes place at a Denny's, by the way.
Was it a Denny's?
Yeah, Lou expects Rick to come at him with like the same type of verbal resume assault that that Lou did. But Rick just says like, I'm Rick. I really need a job. I came here 3 buses to get here. I'm desperate. I'll do anything. Hire Rick.
Hire Rick.
And he wanted his verbal play to be as like quick and
said, sell
fiery
yourself.
Sell yourself.
Yeah.
I hate it when people tell me to sell myself. I've had to be in a couple like professional development workshops recently and just instructions on networking. It's just all this. They want me to be Lou Bloom. They might not know it, but that's what they're encouraging.
Yeah.
I'm not going to play that game.
No.
Rick gets hired for $30 a night because he has a phone with GPS and he knows LA.
Yep, and that's what he's willing to accept.
Yeah. So Lou is officially a boss. He's in management now.
Yep, he has employees.
So now they are, Lou and Rick are going to listen to the police scanner, hang out at night.
All day into the night.
In Lou's car, which is a shitty Toyota, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
There's this one shot of Lou sitting pretzel style on the roof of his car while Rick is inside in the passenger seat.
Mm-hmm.
It is ridiculous. It's a ridiculous
shot.
They're there all day. It's awesome, but the way he's positioned, like, literally on top of Rick now. He's sitting on the roof. It's just a big power play.
Mm-hmm.
And he's sitting like a guru.
They're listening to the scanner, and they finally get the code that they're looking for in the neighborhood that they want. And so this is where we see that Lou is a speed demon.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he has a need for speed. Like, he can't. There's
he doesn't care about anything other than arriving to the crime scene as quickly as possible.
And Rick is very nervous and jittery and just really scared. And he just can't get it together. Like, he's trying to give him the directions, but he's going so fast.
He's grabbing onto the handle and petrified.
Mm-hmm. And so they end up missing a turn. And when they get to the location, they're late, and Joe is already leaving the scene with the footage.
Yeah. Lou, like, has a talking to with Rick, but it's not as vicious.
I feel like when we talked about the car accident earlier. Yeah.
Bill Paxton.
Yeah. It's Bill Paxton, and he was at the scene earlier. He was the one that introduced Lou to the life of being a nightcrawler.
Mm-hmm.
That was him, yeah.
Yeah. So, like I was saying, Luke, I was the first time I saw this kind of expecting Lou to really yell at Rick and go off on him. but it's more like a boss just talking to an employee, just saying, mm-hmm. next time it's really important that we communicate. And yeah,
he breaks down fear.
Yeah, you know what fear stands for? False. What is it?
Evidence.
False evidence of being real.
Yeah. While he's still speeding, and Rick is still
and
scared.
Still scared. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. We get a couple scenes of them continuing to film stuff. There's a biker that got stuck under a car.
Mm.
And then there's a big crime scene.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the next crime scene to go to, Lou actually, he crosses the yellow line, the yellow tape.
This tape, yeah.
Mm-hmm. He crosses it and steps into the scene and goes into the crime scene, like walks into the house and is filming and actually starts to stage. This is the first time we see him stage.
With the magnets.
Yeah, with the pictures. So yeah, he wants to get the perfect shot. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he didn't know what was going on at the crime scene, so he just went and found out for himself by breaking and entering.
Yeah.
Well, we shouldn't say it was the first time he staged anything, because he staged that first one.
Which first one?
That first car accident.
The first car accident?
Or did that one not happen yet? Never mind then.
No, that one didn't happen.
Oh, no,
when he like moved the body, yeah. That one is like a step up, because that's when he's actually like touching, you know, a body. He's
all right. For some in my mind, I thought that one already happened. Okay.
Okay. Yeah, so it starts with the pictures.
Yeah, Lou takes that footage to the station, mm-hmm. and the two producers are Nina, which is Renee Russo, and the other one's Frank.
Mm-hmm.
And Frank doesn't want to run it because it's clear that Lou didn't have permission to enter that house.
Yeah.
But
Frank,
Nina
Frank knows right away. Like,
yeah, I think Nina knows too, but she just doesn't have morals.
But he is just so done with it from the get-go too. Like, and he throughout all of this is just not, doesn't want to deal with Lou.
He's asking the right questions, but he's also asking too many questions.
Yeah.
And Nina doesn't care.
She and the two of them together, they are just the opposite in terms of their reactions and, you know, thoughts towards him.
Yeah. Nina says, your job is to write the tweet of the day and make sure Sharon faces the right way when she does the weather. And then Lou and Nina go off, and Lou says right away, I love how you handled Frank.
Mm-hmm.
And he's doing his version of flirting.
Yeah.
Which is talking about a business course charming. He took online.
Weirdly charming. And Nina is falling for it. Like, she's digging it.
A little bit.
The speech is kind of compelling. If you're looking for someone, if you're attracted to people with like drive and ambition, mm-hmm. his speech is like full of that, and he asks this question. He's just like, knowing what you want to do is exactly as important as why you want to do it. And that's when she's like really drawn in to this guy, and he's just like, you know, I found that the news is my new thing. Like, I want to make this my life. This is my passion.
I decided it's something I love, and it also happens to be something I'm very good at.
Yeah.
So then we get a kind of a montage of him downloading more footage onto his computer, showing that he got more videos on the news.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, you see all these titles in all caps. One that stuck out for me was Toddler Stabbed, which sounds like a horrible scene, but probably a crowning achievement for Lou Bloom.
Drunk mom kills biker.
Oh, yikes.
Yeah. Brutal dog attack. Horror at Echo Park.
Yeah, and then the next thing we see confirms that some time has passed and he's been successful, because now he's at a gas station filling up his brand new car, which is the Dodge Challenger, like with the red car with the black stripe.
He got a faster car.
Yeah. My dad used to drive that car. It was his midlife crisis sports car. Yeah. Which is funny that it's Lou Bloom's. I'm hot shit. I'm gonna get this car now.
This is status car.
It's a hot ride.
And so he communicates to Rick that he's improving, right? And he sees his improvement. But then he also reprimands him for spilling gasoline on his car.
Yeah.
All in the same breath.
Just trying to keep him in his place. Stay in a position to be manipulated.
Yeah. Brings him up, brings him back down.
I like they're stopped at a red light while they're talking and listening to a police scanner. And then once an accident comes through, he just hits the gas, goes right through the red. Because he's got to get there in time. And this is the car crash where he drags the body into the headlights so that he can get a better shot.
Yeah.
And this is where I really took note of the music. The score is like, it's like got these dark undertones, but in a way it's like inspirational in this, like, Lou's having this moment of inspiration as he's dragging the body and shooting it. And then these like congos come in, or bongos.
That's really weird. Yeah.
And that's when I thought, like, wait, is this like they're like doing news music a little bit?
Yeah, and the beat, because the beat is a bit like, it's got that sort of like uplifting, sort of that, like that upbeat.
It's like that and the news theme songs.
It is like surprisingly inspirational during scenes that are a bit dark.
We're supposed to feel inspired by Lewis, you know,
and go getter. And we do though. I feel like during the movie, it's tough because he's one of those main characters that he is so flawed in all that he is, but he's so good at what he does and at, you know, talking to people and at being who he is that he's likable in that way.
Yeah, as a viewer, you kind of want to see just how high up he can go.
Yeah, before he kills someone.
Right. Speaking of, as he's filming, Joe pulls up in his van, but he's too late. Lou got the footage, and he sells it to Nina at KSML. Who notices blood on his sleeve, and Lou very nonchalantly is like, "Oh, okay," but he's not paying attention.
Yeah, he doesn't.
He's just
care
focusing
about it. He doesn't
on the news anchors, watching them report his story.
Yeah, he's like, "Yeah, I'm focusing on framing now. That's my thing, framing." Yeah.
Yeah. Is that blood on your shirt? Maybe. Do you like Mexican food?
Do you want to go out sometimes?
I heard of. I recently heard of a Mexican place called Cabanita. He does the. Cabanita. The accent. He like tries to pronounce it in Spanish. She turns him down.
Because she doesn't want to fuck it up. She doesn't want to fuck up the relationship.
Yeah. But
she wants to keep it professional.
But he says, what if by saying no, you are fucking it up?
And then she's
just
like,
are you threatening me? And he says, that's not what I said.
Yeah. And now she doesn't know what to do. She doesn't know what to say. All right. So Joe, in the next scene, Joe tries to, well, Joe, we learned that has been a nightcrawler for 14 years, right? He approaches, Lou and tries to team up with him, get him on his team, on his side, I guess, 'cause he sees that he's actually getting his work, you know, published by the news or whatever, but
he's
Lou
definitely a bit jealous.
A bit. And Lou is just not interested. Just really not interested. Doesn't need to think about it. Doesn't need to take any time to think it over. He's just like, get out of my face before I like grab you by both ears and yell in your face.
Yeah.
What a good, that whole That scene was great. That little monologue, that little speech he gave.
Mm-hmm. So I loved working good. For myself. And yeah. And as he walks away, all Bill Paxton can let out is, fuck you, twerp.
Twerp.
I mean, he is a twerp, but he's so much more. And surprise, surprise, the next scene is at a Mexican restaurant with Lou and Nina.
Mm-hmm.
Creepy, creepy scene.
Creepy. He showers her in compliments with no, like, as we said earlier, like, no, like, honesty in it. Like, no, like, heart in it. No, nothing behind it other than, oh, this is what I need to say.
Yeah, he said he compliments her as if he's giving a book report.
Yeah, like back to
another back. Example of, you know, him just saying what he thinks a human should say in any given situation.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like your eyeshadow and your hair looks nice tonight. And I love that suit.
Yeah. He stalked her a little bit by watching all the footage she has on the internet and reading all the information she has there, which he says is a lot. We learned she's from Philly. So that's exciting.
Connect.
Also that she has a pattern of only staying at news stations for the duration of her 2-year contracts, which is coming up soon. And he uses this as a bargaining chip to try to get her to sleep with him so that he can keep giving her footage so she can jump to a more successful position.
And she actually, in that moment, I mean, she could choose to get up and leave and just, you know, do things she usually does. But no, she kind of just like stays cornered, stays right where she is.
She literally is cornered the way they're sitting in like the booth. She's up against the wall.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting.
Yeah.
And
he's able to make his terms and she just agrees because he knows so much. He's so smart. He's so intelligent. You know, he's done his research. You know, he's just like, you need me. And, you know, I need some things from you. So let's make it happen.
And he lays out his case so strongly and so clearly that.
Yes.
I feel like even the most strong-willed person would have a hard time saying no to him and saying and turning him down. He's so convincing in that moment.
And it's really gross, but he doesn't present it to you in a gross way. It's very in a matter-of-fact way. But it is very gross.
Genevieve, would you say that friends are little gifts you give yourself?
That's the next thing I have written down, and they are we know that to be true. Wow, that
what a way to use that though.
it's all about what he can get out of any interaction. Just a megalomaniac narcissist. There's another time lapse, and this one it starts with some Ferris wheels, but the reason it's in my notes is because then it transitions, and this is actually the last thing we see before it fades into the next scene inside the car. We get a couple seconds with the wacky waving inflatable tube guy.
Oh, yeah.
Just like right after that really intense scene where he's like blackmailing her into sex.
Into sex, yeah.
What a wacky wavy inflatable arm flailing tube man.
Yes, that's the one. And so it's like that guy waving around as it fades into Rick and Lou in the car. There's just like parts of this movie that I picked up on. I guess it was my first time watching it in a little while. Definitely since seeing Velvet Buzzsaw, Dan Gilroy and Jake Gyllenhaal's last movie, which isn't very good, but is super goofy. And so I just noticed, like, there's some goofiness happening in this movie, even though it's, like, very dark and twisted. So that
Someone was telling me that they were surprised. They were, like, didn't know how they were going to feel about seeing Jake Gyllenhaal in such a, more of like a dark, twisty role.
Mm.
Whereas I think that that's, it's easy for me to see him in either way. Because you sort of have like the Donnie Darko side of him.
Yeah, he's Donnie Darko and he's October Sky.
Exactly, exactly.
It's the yin and yang of Jake. Gotta love him. So now Rick's gonna try to get some more money.
Yeah, he wants a raise.
Mm-hmm. It's time. See the car. I guess he's still making $30 a night, which is definitely not enough.
Mm-hmm.
All of his negotiations. Nina's an expert negotiator, but we just saw what happened with her and Lou in that restaurant. Rick has no hope.
Yeah.
As much as he can try, Lou's always going to come back at him with some managerial nonsense about working hard and showing your a good employee and your worth.
Mm-hmm.
Good things come to people who wait. Yeah. And there's a plane crash. We don't see the plane crash. We hear about it. And then they go to it.
And Joe's already there. And he has the footage. Mm-hmm. And he's like, hey, I was trying to tell you. I was trying to get you on the team, but you didn't want to be there, so...
Yeah, my second van is at a suicide right now.
Yep.
Says, like, to brag.
Yeah. And so all he has is the stabbing in Corona.
Mm-hmm.
And he presents that to Nina, and she snaps on him. She loses it because she does not
give a damn about the stabbing in Corona.
No.
Yeah, I don't give a damn about Corona.
No. She was promised something in a really gross way, right? And that like negotiation that happened, and he said that he would give her the material that she would need in order to be successful. And she's just like, that's not what we agreed upon. Give me what you fucking owe me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Almost like sexual abusers aren't trustworthy individuals. We get a mirror scene.
Yeah,
I love scenes, Genevieve, of characters in movies giving that like a good nice hard look in the mirror. I love that moment.
Yeah, and this is a great one. You get a nice sort of symbolic mirror break, character break sort of moment.
Exactly. In this one, actually, apparently the broken glass was unintentional. He does like grab the mirror and shake it. I'm sure that was planned because it looks really cool how his reflection is distorted. Really cool. Then it's like a medicine cabinet door. Mm-hmm. He like slams it and that's when it breaks. Apparently that wasn't planned and Jake had to get 46 stitches in his hand after that.
46? Mm-hmm. Oh, man.
What a little tidbit.
Yeah. So, now Lou's gonna do some sabotage.
Yeah.
We see him underneath one of the vans of the rival company with the wrench. Mayhem video.
Mm-hmm.
But he's the.
We can Lou only Bloom assume
the mayhem.
He's probably loosening the brakes or something.
Yeah.
Something.
So the next night, Lou is just listening to the police scanner for something very specific. I forget what the other thing was. Like, Rick is like, why aren't we going to this place? It's more interesting than a car accident.
Mm-hmm.
But Lou's determined to get to this one accident because when they get there, it is the Mayhem video van that hit a telephone pole.
Mm-hmm. And he actually captures them pulling Joe out, putting him on the stretcher. And Joe actually sees him. You can almost see in his eyes, it's almost like you. You did this, but he can't speak or anything.
And you also, like, he's getting the other side of it. Yeah.
And it's that really good shot of like the the camera being on the camera with the light and then panning down and you seeing his face shrouded in darkness. He just looks like this skeleton.
And Rick starts asking questions too about, you know, well, how does his car just go right into this pole? Yeah. You know, he finds it odd.
Yeah.
I don't think he puts it together, but he finds it confusing.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, we haven't brought up yet how little blinking Jake Gyllenhaal does in this movie. His eyes are just wide open for most of it.
Mm-hmm.
It's impressive. And
I think I noticed that later on in a two-hander with him and Rick. Him and Riz, where it was just like his eyes are just open the whole time.
Oh, I have another tidbit actually about Rick, relating to our Minari talk actually earlier, because on I think it was either Variety or LA Times YouTube page, they have a Actors on Actors video with Riz and Steven Yeun. Apparently they had both auditioned for the role of Rick. But Steven played it more as like a laid-back stoner guy, and Riz was the only like person that auditioned apparently that added like real sadness to that character, and it works. And I could see how that could be played just as like the stoner archetype.
Yeah, out in LA.
I appreciate that it's not. Yeah. Anywho. Nice. Two great actors that deserve Oscar nominations.
And are, like, getting their due now. Really leading men now. So, good for both.
Also, in that interview, just want to remind everyone, Riz Ahmed is British. He's, like, very British. He's unlike any character I've ever seen him play. It's one of those things. You see him in an interview, you're like, oh yeah. He's a very, very good actor.
It's always like that with British actors. An American film. It was just like, oh yeah, they're from England. Oh, they're from Australia or something, you know?
Yeah. And now is the quote unquote home invasion scene. They get to the scene of the crime before the police and hear gunshots inside the house. So they hide in the bushes. While two guys in ski masks run away and jump into a car and drive off, which Lou does film.
Yeah, he gets all of it. He gets all the footage. He's the first person on the scene.
Mm-hmm. And he's gonna walk inside.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. My heart was actually racing. He gets everything.
And the music you hear is like the music, if it were like a different movie, it would be like when the character stumbles upon the treasure. But it's this horrific crime scene with bodies completely shot up, bloody on the couch, blood smeared on the floor.
Yeah. It was very triumphant, though. The music was very triumphant that was paired with it.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, Lou shooting it with just a blank expression on his face.
Mm-hmm.
Then we get to the crib. So they're in a nursery. No baby.
At least they don't show it at that moment. They don't show you what's inside.
No, they show you that
they show you when he gives the footage to Nina. They show inside.
Oh, does it cut away?
Crib. Yeah, it cuts away when he's actually in the house, so you don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But yeah, there's like three bodies in here. He gets all of them on film, and then actually one of them coughs. One of them is still alive,
right?
And that's when he jets out.
He jets out, pulls over, makes Rick stay in the car so he can pull out his laptop and edit the footage before going right to the station.
Yeah, because there's some things he has to cut out,
and selling it for a lot of money.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, he shows it to Nina and she goes crazy for it. This is like her story. This is what she's been waiting for. This is what he promised her. And so he knows his footage is good, so he sets his price at $15,000, and he's not going to be moved from there.
Yeah, I think he wants a million to start.
Oh yeah, he does.
He asks for $1 million.
Go really high.
He does. Yeah. He and goes 50, wild.
I think he ends up getting 25,000. I like the part where one of the producers, while they're watching the footage, says, "Can we air this?" And then she says, "You mean legally?" And then Rene Russo says, "No, morally. Yes, legally." It's like, why would you even consider morals right now?
Right.
Yeah, but no, those aren't even a question.
Can we get away with showing this is what I'm concerned about.
So then we get to watch it being reported. And you have Nina speaking into the earpiece directly to the anchors, really hammering home like how the sensational news is done with her saying, remind them that it's graphic. Say it again. They escaped and they're on the loose. Repeat that. It's talk about how scary it is.
Yeah, she's really driving in the fear factor of this story. She wants to make a story, a storyline, right? She doesn't just want one. Well, that's how Lou sells it to her. Like, hey, this isn't just one thing. This can be multiple things. You can like track this story because the killers are still out on the loose.
Right.
So that's how she's trying to sell it, how she's trying to justify giving him like that much money. Also, I mean, he really has Nina's arm behind her back because he also like negotiates being introduced to the team. He also introduces his company name, which is just like the most generic name ever.
Video News Production.
Yeah. Just like that.
VMP. What? I love it though.
VMP.
It's like in Step Brothers, Prestige Worldwide. It's the same exact thing.
Yeah. And he's just like, I don't want to have to ask for things. When I set my price, believe me, I thought long and hard about it. And also says like, I don't want to ask for things like I ask for things sexually.
Like, I had to ask in the bedroom the other night. Like, ooh, he got spicy in that moment.
He got real spicy, and she just submitted. She just stayed quiet and was just like, okay, can I have my story
she
now?
Knows. she feels his powerful energy.
Yeah.
But I feel like it needs to be said that it's also, like, a little bit sexy. Like, I'm just going to speak to the other women that, like, have a little bit of, like, a Lou Bloom, like, like, we know you'd kill us, but, like, something about that mystery is kind of...
Will you kill me?
Wow.
It's, like...
No, I'm interested.
Yeah.
I mean, it is Jake Gyllenhaal, so I'm not against
it. It's only because it's Jake Gyllenhaal.
Exactly. Like, you're still Jake. Like you still have those baby blues, and like I still, yeah.
Do you think
that's all?
I mean, this was only 7 years ago, but I'm not sure if they made it now, if this dynamic would be the way it is. I think it's a pretty honest representation of, not all women, but some women in the workplace who deliberately. It's not obviously not their decision, but who endure sexual abuse for the aim of advancing their careers or to avoid the risk of losing their careers.
Yes.
Just the, I don't want to say complicity, but.
Sure. And that side of
she knows what she
important.
Knows what's
I will
happening.
Say complicit, right? Because I mean, I don't want to jump to the end for her character, but like her last line is kind of like crazy to me. And it just
right, you can jump to it because I don't remember what her last line is.
I mean, she's just okay with it,
and she calls him inspirational.
Right,
like she's not at all scared of him.
Learn.
Yeah, like she is not at all like a victim here.
No,
which is. Seems like she is a victim because she's under his control, but she's also willing, which was really blew my mind when I first saw it. I was just like, oh, that changes everything about this dynamic.
Yeah.
It changed everything about her character.
It's all power and money. I mean, that goes back to capitalism.
And she understands interesting, it.
Maybe something interesting about the exploited participation of some mm-hmm. folks. I don't know. Anywho, right after the news story airs that they called Breaking News the Horror House, they cut to a commercial that includes like wolves and it's like for food and it says dinner is complete. And I like that. Mm-hmm. And the police show up because they want to know who shot that footage before they got at the crime scene.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't show, it doesn't become a thing until the next day at Lou's apartment when he lets in Detective Frontieri.
Mm-hmm.
What is that actress' name?
And they want the footage as well.
Yeah.
And he says, oh, you know, I expected you would come. I have a copy for you.
Michelle Hyatt? Hi-hat?
Yeah. Yeah, she's great.
She's a Wire alum.
Yeah. Brianna Barksdale. Mm-hmm. Also, she's the therapist and crazy ex-girlfriend. Really good. So he like fights it a little bit, but he does eventually just give the footage over. He says, actually, I made a copy.
Yeah, I was ready.
Mm-hmm.
So what they're getting is cut, you know.
Yeah,
it's just what he wants them to see, and so they go off. He has no interest. He does have an interest, but he doesn't just want to give them the information. Be like, hey, these are the bad guys. You guys should go out and get them.
He needs it to be on his terms.
He needs it to be on his terms. He needs to do it, and he needs to catch it.
Yeah. And he looks up the license plate number and he gets the name Castilla, and he somehow finds the address and promotes Rick.
Yeah, he gets Rick, and it's just like, this is a critical moment. Like, this is what you can call the critical moment, right? And I'm so happy that you're a part of this, and that, you know, your way of thinking is going to be a part of this company for years to come, right? He's really selling him on this idea and on this company that he's building. And he's like, name your price. And Rick is so, you know, he's so innocent, and he doesn't want to take advantage of him. He doesn't want to ask for too much. And so he settles. Like 100, he goes for 75 instead, and so Lou is just like, there you go, got it.
Lou accepts it right away. Yeah,
right away. And he's like, damn, I could have. That's when he knew. He was like, I could have got more money. Mm-hmm. He was like, absolutely, you could have, but not happening now. Like,
right,
negotiations are closed.
It's brutal.
Mm-hmm.
And they get to the address that Lou found, and they have that the night vision camera now.
And so, yeah, so Rick is not on board with this. Yeah. Rick has a moral problem with Lou's plan once he tells him what it is that he wants to do, which is get these guys in a public area and then film them and then watch the chaos unfold.
Yeah. Though Rick does have a moral qualm with it, but also it seems like, because he tries to renegotiate, it seems like he still has a price. He would go beyond his morals for the right price, which unfortunately I think is the case for most people.
Mm-hmm. And so he wants half of the night. He wants half of everything they make this night. And so Lou agrees. He's like, I can't negotiate with you on that. So it's over. So he's gonna get half.
Right, because Lou needs him in that moment.
Mm-hmm.
And some time passes, and it's time for Lou to wake up Rick because the guy's leaving the house, getting in the van. follow him to an apartment.
Too close for me.
Super close.
Super close.
In a very memorable car.
And then whipping around in that U-turn and just being very, very sus in a way that made me uncomfortable.
Mm.
Yeah. Eventually the murderers go to a diner, and this is the spot. This is where Lewis calls into 911, makes his report about the gunmen from the home invasion being in this diner and that they might be armed.
A cool looking diner, I might add. I feel like it needs to be noted that diner was sick looking.
All that glass.
Yeah, huge glass windows. So across the street in the nighttime, you just see all the goings on.
Mm-hmm. And the glass made for a cool shot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's so tense. Rick doesn't want to leave the car.
This is when he gets half. And then he's like, actually, no. He already got he already, half.
He already did that.
Yeah, he doesn't.
This is where he tries to go back on his promise, and Lou has his whole speech. What if the problem isn't that I don't understand people, but that I don't like them? And then he pretty much insinuates that if Rick really is backing out, then he might get hurt. Yeah. I might hurt you,
right now. Yeah.
I'm not saying you will, but if you did get hurt tonight, I'm sure you would go back and regret the decision you're making.
Mm-hmm. So Rick gets out.
Gets
the shot. Yeah. He sets up the camera.
And the police come.
Mm-hmm.
And two enter, and then more police come.
I think the first two are there just to get lunch, or maybe are they there to maybe just scope it out? Because it's not like they walk in there and do anything.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wasn't sure at first, because they do walk right up to the counter, and I think at first maybe they're just trying to be not obvious. And then two or three arrive. I'm not sure how many the second car had.
It was two. It was two more cops come in. And by this time, we see that one of the men have pulled out a gun.
Mm-hmm.
And then when two more cops come in, that's when they start to shoot.
Yes.
Now it's a shootout.
One guy breaks through the glass on the side.
Mm-hmm.
Just saying the other one. I mean, a cop is shot on the ground. Another guy runs to the side to the SUV, and a car chase ensues.
Mm-hmm.
Rick hops into the car.
It's really good.
They go off. It's the SUV, and the cops right behind him, and video production news right behind them.
In the action.
And when Lou's showing this footage to Nina later, we only see the end part, and I really want to see how the car chase stuff came out, because I feel like it probably didn't come out that well. I feel like you wouldn't see something on the news from that kind of angle. It would be too shaky.
And Rick had some shaky hands. We all know that. Like, mm-hmm. That was Rick's number one issue.
There was such great energy provided by Riz in this scene of him just being like, whoa, and being like,
he's us.
Yeah, he's really us in that moment. And he can't, he's like really, really scared to be in the action.
The car chase ends up with a cop car being hit. And then another one where the cop car and the SUV hit each other and they both flip.
They both flip, yeah.
And
so Luke gets out first. With his camera, is gonna like film it, and he takes a peek into the car where the guy is, mm-hmm. the bad guy, and then he tells Rick to come over and get the shot while he stands further behind where the flipped cop car is.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And so when
Pretty much Lou saw that the guy was still alive.
Yeah, and conscious.
So coerces Rick into getting up close to getting the shot. Rick thinks he's dead, mm-hmm. and ends up getting shot.
Yeah.
And Lou films it all.
Yep. He films Rick's death. He films the gunsman's death. Like, he gets it all.
Mm-hmm.
And it's in those last moments where Rick is just like, you knew. you knew he was alive. You knew this would happen. Mm-hmm. And Lou is just like, yeah. But also, like, you're untrustworthy.
I can't jeopardize my company's success.
Yeah.
For an untrustworthy employee.
So this is your termination, literally.
Oh, God.
Yeah. And that's... Yeah, your final termination from this job. Oh my god!
Picks up the second camcorder, heads over to the station, and right away, just bantering with all the people at the station. Yeah. Like, oh hey Willie, and oh I can tell by your tie, it's Friday.
Yeah, psycho.
It's wild.
Just no remorse, no feelings, no nothing.
So he shows Nino the footage and.
She thinks it's amazing.
Yeah, it's the best thing she's ever seen.
She has such a boner for it. It's so intimate when she's
the way it's
him,
lit.
Wow.
Yeah, it's like dark lighting. They're speaking very softly, facing each other directly, talking about how great it is. Meanwhile, it's paused in the background on the screen. You still see Rick's face from the last frame of the video. His eyes are slightly open still. Yeah. And it's like they're like getting off, literally they're getting off on this young man's death.
Yeah.
And that's the news.
The detectives walk in, they want to like confiscate everything, they want to take it, but Nina's just like, no, you're not getting none of this without
it's our warrant. Property
it's our property. Yeah,
you can talk to Lou.
Yep.
And they do. They notice Lou's right there, so they cuff him and take him away. Meanwhile, Frank tells Nina that they learned that drugs were found at the house. So it was actually a drug robbery and not a home invasion. But Nina says, give it to the noon crew. It detracts from the story. Frank says, this is the story. This is what happened. Narrative. But yeah, the narrative should be what happened. No, the narrative is... urban crime slipping into the suburbs.
Yeah. That's what she wants.
Yep. And Frank says, you sound like Lou. And Nina says, he is an inspiration.
Yeah, that's when I was like, my head turned and I looked at her sideways like, oh, okay. Okay, you're in.
You really
you're
did drink
in.
The Kool-Aid. Yeah.
Yeah, she really did. She really did.
She saw those ratings.
Mm-hmm.
Lou gets interrogated. The detective does not believe him, but also can't prove anything.
Yeah, she pretty much says everything. She knows it, but she can't prove it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so he's untouchable.
Yeah, so he walks out of the station. Walks into a crowd.
Yeah, walks off.
Fades to white.
Mm-hmm.
And then we get a little coda at the end. Where we fade in from white to see two news vans side by side, and they say Video News Productions on them, and there's two guys and a woman in a company polo shirts and khakis probably, and Lou arrives and he gives a speech.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is like he reached his final form, which is really, like I said, it's the same Lou as the beginning. He didn't grow or change at all. We just saw an escalation of that.
You can tell he's so happy.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
We find out that those young people are interns. So he finally got his unpaid interns.
Mm-hmm. Got some more Ricks.
And he's like dangling the promise of an actual job in front of them. Most important thing is that you listen and you do what I say. You follow my orders.
Oh, yeah. I mean, his last line is great. Yeah, go ahead.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. I will never ask you to do anything I wouldn't do myself, he says.
Right, yeah.
And the kicker there is there's nothing. There's nothing he wouldn't do.
Yeah, he'll do it. So
he'll do it.
Good luck.
Good luck to those three.
And that's
the sequel. lights up on the light of those those three.
We see the vans drive off in two opposite directions. The it's the last shot. It's like a crane. The camera goes up. We see the cars driving off, and it's like he multiplied. It's scary.
It's growing.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And then the end credits roll over. It's usually just black in the credits, but in this one you get the moon. So that's fun. The moon is on the left side of the screen while you see the credits.
Starts with it, ends with it.
Nightcrawler. So, Genevieve, is Nightcrawler a movie or a film?
I would call Nightcrawler a movie.
I would agree with you.
Why do you think I would agree with you two?
Oh, we're all in agreement.
We're all in agreement.
What does that mean to you, Genevieve, that Nightcrawler's a movie and not a film?
To me, the reason it's a movie and not a film, it didn't have... I mean, and I love the movie. I chose this movie. This movie, I think, is great.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily think it has the depth to be considered a film.
Yeah. I think...
I don't know. And I gave this some thought. I just think it's a movie, you know, and it's because so I think, unfortunately, I think it's one that kind of fell through the cracks a little bit, you know?
Yeah.
I kind of like that, though. I mean, it's on Netflix. Anyone can watch it. But, yeah, it wasn't a huge phenomenon when it first came out. But word of mouth. Tell people.
And that incredible performance.
You know Nightcrawler?
Nightcrawler.
Jake Gyllenhaal.
Mr. Blue Eyes.
Mm-hmm.
I've said that twice now. I hope he has blue eyes. He does.
No, he does. He definitely does.
He definitely does. But yeah. Also, yeah, because he has to. I know he did in this past movie, but I'm trying to think if he does. Good to know.
Oh, thank you for joining us, Genevieve. Thank you.
I am so happy that I was able to come on. It was a good time.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any plugs? Anything you want to promote?
Anything that I want to promote? End?
Social medias, anything. Yeah.
Oh my goodness. The only thing I want to promote is that I have started getting involved in the mutual aid in my community, and I encourage other folks to try their best to get involved in the mutual aid organization in their community. There are larger, like, Philadelphia groups, and then there's some that are quite central to different neighborhoods. Mm-hmm. Either way, there's a lot that's happening virtually. I know that folks are rightfully still being careful and should continue being careful. So try and get involved in mutual aid. It's really, really cool.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
And get your vaccine if you're able.
If you're able, yeah. And, you know, follow us. Not as important, but follow us on social at Movie Film Pod.
Oh,
yeah. Or email moviefilmpod@gmail.com. Like, rate, review, subscribe.
Follow me, the actual Genevieve, though.
Yes. And I'll put that in the episode description. And check back next week. It's not Toy Story 3. The week after that will be, though, I promise.
No.
Oh, and wait. Can I plug myself? Can I plug myself?
Yeah, plug yourself.
Once it gets warm, I'm going to start churning out my my resin art again. So if anyone's in the market for, you know.
Wait, I don't think I knew about this. What is resin art?
Resin art, it's a substance. You mix it together and it cures and hardens, and you can create different you can make different sculptures and make different like purposeful art. So I make ashtrays and containers and different things like that, coasters. So I post those things on my Instagram. So if anyone's in need.
Great. So at the real Genevieve, though. Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And tune in next week to movie.
Film. If it bleeds, it leads. That's my hint for next week.
Thanks, boys.